1. Rose Garden Acceptance Speech. June 14, 1993 was a lovely, sun-drenched day in Washington, D.C. Just after 2 p.m., President William Jefferson Clinton and Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg walked out of the White House and into the Rose Garden. They stood side by side on the dais in front of politicians, press, and Ginsburg's family and friends. President Clinton spoke for about 10 minutes, first praising outgoing Justice Byron White before announcing his nomination of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He chose Judge Ginsburg as his nominee for the Supreme Court, he said, for 3 reasons. First, in her years on the bench, she has genuinely distinguished herself as one of our nation's best judges, progressive in outlook, wise in judgment, balanced and fair in her opinions. Second, over the course of a lifetime in her pioneering work on behalf of the women of this country, she has compiled a truly historic record of achievement in the finest traditions of American law and citizenship. And finally, I believe that in the years ahead, she will be able to be a force for consensus building on the Supreme Court, just as she has been on the Court of Appeals, so that our judges can become an instrument of our common unity in the expression of their fidelity to the Constitution. After describing Ruth Ginsburg's legal background, the obstacles she had overcome, and her character, he concluded, quite simply, what's in her record speaks volumes about what's in her heart. Throughout her life, she has repeatedly stood for the individual, the person less well off, the outsider in society, and has given those people greater hope by telling them that they have a place in our legal system, by giving them a sense that the Constitution and the laws protect all the American people, not simply the powerful. President Clinton, most likely hoping to pave the way for a smooth bipartisan confirmation process, made repeated references to Judge Ginsburg as a moderate, calling her a centrist, a consensus builder, a healer, a judge who can't be called a liberal or conservative. He went on to speak about the exhaustive search process, specifically mentioning Bruce Babbitt and Stephen Breyer as leading candidates who may well find themselves in that position someday in the future. He concluded his remarks saying, "I am proud to nominate this path-breaking attorney, advocate, and judge to be the 107th Justice to the United States Supreme Court." As Judge Ginsburg approached the microphone, the audience stood and applauded. She placed her remarks on the podium, careful to keep her hands on the pages as they fluttered in the summer breeze. There had been no first drafts prepared by White House speechwriters and no edits from administrative officials. Years later, she would confide, "One of the nice things about the short amount of time was that I didn't have to run the remarks by anyone on the White House staff. There just wasn't enough time." She had shown the remarks to the president about 15 minutes before they stepped out into the Rose Garden. President Clinton bent the microphone down so that his diminutive nominee might be heard. Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, speaking slowly and enunciating each word, as is her practice, delivered her acceptance speech. Nomination Acceptance Speech, White House Rose Garden, Washington, D.C., June 14, 1993.
Mr. President, I am grateful beyond measure for the confidence you have placed in me, and I will strive with all that I have to live up to your expectations in making this appointment. I appreciate, too, the special caring of Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the more so because I do not actually know the senator. I was born and brought up in New York, the state Senator Moynihan represents, and he was the very first person to call with good wishes when President Carter nominated me in 1980 to serve on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. Senator Moynihan has offered the same encouragement on this occasion. May I introduce, at this happy moment, three people very special to me. My husband, Martin D. Ginsburg, my son-in-law, George T. Sparrow, Jr., and my son, James Stephen Ginsburg.
Please stand up.
The announcement the president just made is significant, I believe, because it contributes to the end of the days when women, at least half the talent pool in our society, appear in high places only as one-at-a-time performers. Recall that when President Carter took office in 1976, no woman ever served on the Supreme Court, and only one woman, Shirley Hufstetler of California, then served at the next federal court level, the United States Courts of Appeals. Today, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor graces the Supreme Court bench, and close to 25 women serve at the Federal Court of Appeals level, two as chief judges. I am confident that more will soon join them. That seems to me inevitable, given the change in law school enrollment. My law school class in the late 1950s numbered over 500. That class included less than 10 women. As the president said, not a law firm in the entire city of New York bid for my employment as a lawyer when I earned my degree. Today, few law schools have female enrollment under 40%, and several have reached or passed the 50% mark. And thanks to Title VII, no entry doors are barred. My daughter Jane reminded me a few hours ago, in a good luck call from Australia, of a sign of the change we have had the good fortune to experience. In her high school yearbook, on her graduation in 1973, the listing for Jane Ginsburg under ambition was to see her mother appointed to the Supreme Court. The next line read, if necessary, Jane will appoint her. Jane is so pleased, Mr. President, that you did it instead. And her brother James is too. I expect to be asked in some detail about my views of the work of a good judge on a high court bench. This afternoon is not the moment for extended remarks on that subject, but I might state a few prime guides. Chief Justice Rehnquist offered one I keep in the front of my mind. A judge is bound to decide each case fairly in accord with the relevant facts and the applicable law, even when the decision is not, as he put it, what the home crowd wants. Next, I know no better summary than the one Justice O'Connor recently provided, drawn from a paper by New York University Law School professor Bert Newborn. The remarks concern the enduring influence of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, They read, when a modern constitutional judge is confronted with a hard case, Holmes is at her side with three gentle reminders. First, intellectual honesty about the available policy choices. Second, disciplined self-restraint in respecting the majority's policy choice. And third, principled commitment to defense of individual autonomy, even in the face of majority action. To that, I can only say, amen. I am indebted to so many for this extraordinary chance and challenge. To a revived women's movement in the 1970s that opened doors for people like me. To the civil rights movement of the 1960s, from which the women's movement drew inspiration. To my teaching colleagues at Rutgers and Columbia, and for 13 years, my D.C. Circuit colleagues, who shaped and heightened my appreciation of the value of collegiality. Most closely, I have been aided by my life's partner, Martin D. Ginsburg, who has been, since our teenage years, my best friend and biggest booster. By my mother-in-law, Evelyn Ginsburg, the most supportive parent a person could have. And by a daughter and son with the taste to appreciate that daddy cooks ever so much better than mommy and so phased me out of the kitchen at a relatively early age. Finally, I know Hillary Rodham Clinton has encouraged and supported the president's decision to utilize the skills and talents of all the people of the United States. I did not, until today, know Mrs. Clinton, but I hasten to add that I am not the first member of my family to stand close to her. There is another I love dearly, to whom the First Lady is already an old friend. My wonderful granddaughter, Clara, witnessed this super unposed photograph taken last October when Mrs. Clinton visited the nursery school in New York and led the little ones in the toothbrush song. The small person right in front is Clara. I have a last thank you. It is to my mother, Celia Amster Bader, the bravest and strongest person I have known, who was taken from me much too soon. I pray that I may be all that she would have been had she lived in an age when women could aspire and achieve and daughters are cherished as much as sons. I look forward to stimulating weeks this summer, and if I am confirmed, to working at a neighboring court to the best of my ability for the advancement of the law in the service of society. Thank you.
There were few dry eyes in the Rose Garden when Judge Ginsburg concluded her remarks. The audience immediately rose, applauding. People looked at each other, nodding in approval. The president, obviously moved by her last thank you, wiped tears from his eyes and told his nominee in a choked voice,
"That was a terrific job."
During our interview with President Clinton in 2014, he reflected back on the Rose Garden event with visible pride. It was a happy day. God, it was a nice day. She showed up with her family, and she was happy as a clam. I remember, you know, she could barely conceal her glee, which is, she's very tight-lipped and disciplined, but I was glad she was happy and not afraid to show it. That meant something to me. I thought it made it likely that she would be not just an intellectual force, but a personal force on the court. President Clinton added that he was deeply moved by what Judge Ginsburg had said about her mother. I identified with it, he told us, because I was influenced by my mother, and because her relationship with her mother and what her mother did for her and how they were, I think had a lot to do with the passion with which she pursued opportunity for the girls and women who might not have had that boost. Asked how he felt about having nominated Ruth Bader Ginsburg to the court, President Clinton chuckled and said, "Even better today than the day I nominated her. She's been a superb justice on the court and off. She's a great role model for women. She's a defender of things I believe are most important in this country. She reads the whole Constitution, doesn't try to rewrite it to fit her political perspectives, but understands it. You know, her job is to keep doing what the founders told her to do, which is form a more perfect union."